Chinese Catholic businessman and democracy advocate Jimmy Lai is found guilty of collusion and sedition by Hong Kong's High Court. What will be his sentence, and is there still hope for his release? Jimmy's daughter, Claire Lai, and their attorney, Jonathan Price, as well as their dear friend, Father Robert Sirico, are here with their thoughts and reflections. And on this World Over Christmas 2025, performances from my Christmas Merry and Bright album, the legendary Johnny Mathis, the NOLA Players, and classic performances from Christmas past, all on this edition of the World Over Live.
Now, Raymond Arroyo.
A warm welcome to all of you joining us in the United States and the world over. An important show for you this week. If you'd like to comment, send me an X post. I'm at Raymond Arroyo and always at Arroyo Grande Show on YouTube. This is our last show of the year, and as we are going to be preempted on Christmas Day and New Year's Day, we wanted to celebrate, which we'll do a little later in the show, as the world over enters the 30th year of its existence. Can you believe it? We've been on the air all that time, 30 years. Now to a story we've been covering for many of those years. This week, a Hong Kong court convicted 78-year-old Catholic media mogul Jimmy Lai on charges of alleged collusion with foreign forces and sedition, charges that stem from his advocacy for democracy and meeting with American officials. The verdict has drawn international condemnation. But what happens now? Can diplomatic pressure from the U.S., Britain, or even the Vatican make a difference? Joining me is Jimmy's daughter, Claire Lai, his attorney, Jonathan Price, as well as his friend, president of the Acton Institute, Father Robert Sirico. Thank you all for being here. Jimmy Lai has now been convicted on three violations of this National Security Act, for which he's been charged, two counts of collusion with foreign entities, as I mentioned, one of sedition. Jimmy's son, Sebastian, said after the hearing, "My family and I are saddened but not surprised by the guilty verdict in my father's case. We've always known that my father was being prosecuted solely for his courageous journalism and unwavering commitment to democracy." Claire, you've said your father remains spiritually strong despite everything, but as a daughter watching this unfold, what's going through your mind now and what's the next step?
I'm sad about the conviction, but actually shortly before we got it, I got a letter from my father. It was right around, he wrote it right around the start of the Advent period. And it's, as usual, he ends it with a prayer. And in my previous letter, I had expressed certain worries to him, both about him and about myself. And there he chided me and he said, you know, why do you worry when our Lord is so good? You know, we shouldn't worry. We should just trust. And in it, he said that, you know, he in his prayer, he's asked our Lord to help him turn away from sins and his sins and sort of guide him closer to him and his church. And I think that's what I try to remind myself of on days like that. I mean, if he can keep that mindset in prison, I can do that much.
Yeah, we all can do that. Jimmy's 78 years old, Claire. I'm saying that for the audience. I know you know that. He's been in solitary confinement for over 1,800 days. His declining health has been well documented, the weight loss, diabetes, heart palpitations. Given your dad's condition, Claire, are you afraid that even with an appeal, time is running out?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, he is 78. His health is rapidly declining. I mean, over the last 5 years, I've seen his health decline, and a lot more dramatically over the last year, like just over a year. I mean, in less than a year, he lost 10 kilos, and that's after having lost a significant amount the previous four already. He has heart issues despite having a perfectly healthy heart before. He has much higher blood pressure than a year ago, despite taking blood pressure medication. He has infections that last for months. He has heat rashes in summer. He has failing eyesight and failing hearing. He has nails that are turning colors and falling off. He has rotting teeth and just a myriad of health issues. And it's, you know, and just with an appeal, I mean, it's, you know, it's, so much of how long it takes for an appeal is at the mercy of a lot of the Hong Kong's political system. I mean, if you look at his fraud appeal, you know, we appealed immediately after he was sentenced for almost 4 years ago, and we're still waiting for the judgment from the Court of Appeal. And with a case like the national security law, we will definitely have to appeal to the Court of Final Appeal. I mean, what will that be, like 8 years? I mean, my father does not have eight more years. Not in those conditions.
Jonathan Price, you're part of Jimmy's international legal team. From a legal standpoint, walk us through what happened here. I mean, this was a bench trial. There was no jury. It was three government-appointed judges. How does this work, and what does it tell us about the Hong Kong judicial system, which was once the envy of the world?
Yeah, yes, it was, Raymond. And let's just remind ourselves how this came about. This law, the national security law under which he's now been convicted, was introduced in July 2020 with the sole purpose of suppressing legitimate and lawful and peaceful, totally peaceful protest in Hong Kong. Within several weeks of the law coming into force, they'd arrested and charged, they'd arrested Jimmy Lai under this law, and he was later charged with these two offences under the national security law and the additional offence for which he's now been convicted. He's been in prison since then. The trial has taken 2 years. It was delayed by 2 years and didn't commence until December 2023. It's taken 2 years to run until now. The closing arguments were in August, and we've just seen the conviction yesterday. Sentencing now won't take place until the new year. And I'm afraid that the sentencing under the national security law is prescribed, and for grave offences such as the ones for which Mr. Lai has been convicted, he's likely to get a minimum of 10 years, but realistically and based on precedent, a minimum of 15 or 20, and a maximum, if the court deems the offences to be sufficiently serious, of life in prison. And for a man who turned 78 last week, as you've pointed out, anything in that range amounts, in effect, to a life sentence.
Hmm. You know, the prosecution presented 161 articles from Apple Daily, which was Jimmy's paper, as evidence of sedition, along with text messages, social media posts. But essentially, they convicted him for journalism and for meeting with American officials. Jonathan, are these charges in any way sustainable under international law? And given that Jimmy is a British citizen, how was he charged at all?
So these are very good questions. Just dealing with the international law element, when the national security law was introduced in Hong Kong, there was an international outcry because it does not contain sufficient protections for basic human rights like the right to freedom of speech and the right to free protest. And Hong Kong consistently assured the international community that those protections remained in Hong Kong. The verdict, the 855-page verdict that came out yesterday contains no analysis of the issue of freedom of speech at all, nor freedom of protest. Those issues are simply absent in any meaningful way from that incredibly long judgment.
Yeah, and Jonathan, one of the biggest things I remember, I followed the trial fairly closely, but the sanctions against China were before the national security law was passed. And once that was passed, he stopped calling for sanctions. Still, they convicted him retroactively of a law that hadn't yet been passed.
Yes,
basically.
Exactly. I mean, it was a retroactive conviction in that the as I pointed out, he was arrested within weeks of the law coming into force. And in order to convict him, they've reached back to 2017 to find activity which they deemed conflicted with the law, although at the time in 2017 when it was conducted was perfectly lawful. And that is that in no sense is that in accordance with the rules of natural justice.
Hmm. Father Sirico, you've known Jimmy Lai for years. I know he's a friend. You produced an excellent documentary, which everyone should watch, on Jimmy's plight, called The Hong Konger. Jimmy converted to Catholicism in 1997, and his faith has really sustained him through 5 years of imprisonment. You've spoken about his suffering, Father, and how that deepened his faith. How so? And what role do you think the Vatican-China secret agreement may have played in Jimmy's ordeal here?
The thing that struck me at the outset when Claire was talking about corresponding with her father, immediately what came to my mind was the correspondence that St. Thomas More had with his daughter, and the similarity of spirituality that was expressed. You can hear it in his response to Claire, the utter confidence in God. And I want to point out that this is precisely what has authoritarians frightened of prisoners like Jimmy Lai. He has an appeal. His soul is free. He's there for a moral purpose, and he's witnessing to the truth of human dignity, the necessity of human liberty. And I think that this is what drives a person closer to God. And I have one of the most precious possessions I have is the crucifixion picture that Jimmy sketched while he was in prison. And I have it in my office at the Acton Institute. And that tells me his identification with the cross of Christ is also his identification with redemption and resurrection that Christ offers. As to the Vatican's dealings with China and the secret accord, this is highly problematic. And what I'm hopeful for is that there may be a change now that we have a new pope who has a different perspective on things. I have no knowledge of what the Pope's perspective is on this, but I know that he's studying the issue. I know that Pope Francis only saw the persecution of communists when he lived in Argentina, and he didn't seem to grasp that communists can be persecutors themselves. Perhaps Pope Leo can have a different perspective on this.
Claire, you and your mother met with Pope Leo not long ago. What did you say to him? What did he say to you? I mean, the Vatican has been very quiet on this case, sadly, in my estimation.
I mean, the Holy Father is at the start of his papacy, so I am extremely grateful that we were able to meet with him, and it was such a blessing and a privilege. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, it's not atypical for Augustinians to sort of try to take in more opinions before decisions are made, but I think just the fact that he was willing to meet with us does say a lot, and he assured us of his prayers, and we of course continue to support him through ours.
Yeah. Jonathan, we know Jimmy's next court date is January 12th for sentencing. Let's talk about this appeals process. I mean, Claire mentioned it a moment ago. Has the legal team decided whether or how to appeal this verdict? And do you believe Hong Kong courts will deliver any justice at all in this point? Or will they just stonewall and leave Jimmy where he is?
So there are 28 days to appeal, and the judgment on the verdict, as I've said, is 855 pages. The decision whether or not to appeal will be made in due course. And but as Claire says, that there are extraneous considerations. However poor the legal reasoning, if there is any legal reasoning in the verdict, it indeed is. These extraneous considerations are perhaps more important. And this is a man in failing health in his very late 70s. Who might face another 4 or 5 years of legal tribulations And that has to be a very real consideration in any decision that's going to be made.
Well, and look, part of the reason we have been so devoted to covering this story over so many years is because I know, as do folks at The Wall Street Journal and other places, that the Chinese don't want Jimmy Lai to become a martyr, and they also don't want people to look closely at the state of their judicial system, which now is, frankly, an embarrassment. Father, do you think there's that fear from the Chinese of making Jimmy Lai a martyr? And might that lend the Vatican and the United States some leverage should they finally decide to speak out in support of Jimmy? I'm talking about the Vatican, the U.S. has.
Well, as to what the Chinese think, I mean, the word inscrutable comes to mind, right? These are not people governed by a moral sensibility. They're governed by a materialist philosophy that preaches the centrality of the state, the Communist Party in particular. So it's hard to, just seen through that lens, to see how they'll see their way out of it. What could happen, and this is speculative on my part, is the great dealer could deal with China. I'm talking, of course, about President Trump. This is his opportunity to step into this and use his negotiating techniques, which we've seen him do around the world, in this very delicate and difficult case.
Yeah, I want to go to that bite. The president was asked about this just the other day after the verdict. I'm going to play what he said, and I should preface this by saying the foreign minister in the UK has condemned this verdict. Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State here in the United States, has condemned this verdict. And then President Trump was asked if he would plead the case of Jimmy before Xi. They have a meeting coming up in April. Watch this.
I feel so badly. I spoke to President Xi about it, and I asked to consider his release. He's not well. He's an older man, and he's not well. So I did put that request out. We'll see what happens. Okay?
Claire, you've said this verdict proves Chinese authorities still fear your father, despite his poor health, for what he represents. What would you say to President Trump now, and what do you hope U.S. diplomacy might be able to achieve here?
We are extremely grateful to President Trump for his continued support of my father. I mean, he and his administration have a proven track record of freeing the unjustly detained, and we hope our father is next. I mean, just, I think around a month ago, over 30 senators signed a letter to President Trump asking him to bring up my father in his trade negotiations with President Xi. And it was later reported by EWTN that it was indeed brought up. And we are extremely, extremely grateful for that. And just on the point of, you know, of saying that it proves that they still fear my father. I mean, if you know, my father, during his evidence, he was attacked so many times by the judges, telling him not to bring politics into the courtroom, despite them being fundamentally political charges. But if you look at the judgment, I mean, it is the most political judgment I have ever read. They say that he hates China. I mean, he has said repeatedly during his evidence he does not hate China, and you know, a lot of his strength it cannot be explained by logic alone. It can only be explained because, I mean, he's guided by the Holy Spirit, and when you're guided by the Holy Spirit, there really isn't space for hate or anger. And I think people in the courtroom saw that, and actually, if you look at the judgment, I mean, they attack him, and they attack the U.S., and they attack other countries. And it's the most political judgment I've ever read, with very, very little legal reasoning, as Jonathan has rightly said.
Yeah. Father Sirico, and then I'm going to go to Jonathan before I run out of time. Is the diplomatic play here the last hand in Jimmy Lai's deck at this moment? does this all hinge on hoping that enough pressure can be placed on the Chinese that they're shamed into releasing him on humanitarian grounds? First, Father Sirico.
Well, certainly on the terrestrial level, that is the case. And the president is well set to be able to do this. But if you ask me, is this the last card to be dealt? It certainly isn't, because the last word in Christianity is life, is resurrection. The logic of this culture of death that confuses the Communist Party with the people of China cannot exist forever. And regardless of how this case goes, I think Jimmy's already won.
Jonathan, I'm going to give you the last word here. I know Lord David Alton in England and certainly Marco Rubio, the president of the United States, the EU, are forcefully raising their voices in Jimmy's favor. Who else would you like to see join that chorus, and what do you hope the outcome will be?
Well, as you point out, the UK Foreign Secretary yesterday made an address to the House of Commons forcefully condemning the conviction and calling for Jimmy Lai's immediate release. Our Prime Minister Keir Starmer is heading over to Beijing at the end of January and has said that it is his top priority to secure the release of his subject, Jimmy Lai. The case is therefore now going to be addressed at a political level, and we have a hope that it can be solved there. It is a case that can be resolved between leaders, as Father Sirico correctly said. The great dealer himself is interested in securing Jimmy Lai's release. Keir Starmer is going to try, and Xi has it in his power to do what is right for his own country. This is only in China's interests to release this man. It is not in China's interests to see Jimmy Lai die in prison in such unjust circumstances.
Yeah, well, he's certainly a hero, and he had all the means. We should tell people perhaps new to the story. Jimmy Lai had the means to leave the country. He's a British citizen. He could very well have escaped this. He chose to stay and stand with the people who were crying out for their freedom. And he remains a prisoner and a martyr to this day. We will continue to follow this case. Claire Lai, Jonathan Price, Father Robert Sirico, we'll leave it there. We'll check back with you all in the new year. And our prayers, of course, continue to go out to Jimmy in his confinement and that he may be comforted and released soon. Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
God bless.
In the spirit of the season, over on the Arroyo Grande podcast, I take you behind the scenes of the making of my Christmas album, Christmas Merry and Bright. You'll see the amazing NOLA players, Jose Feliciano, and many others. But along the way, we share the stories of the most beloved songs of the season. It's on YouTube at Arroyo Grande Show, or wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, iHeart. Subscribe so you never miss an Arroyo Grande Show. And we've got some amazing things coming in the new year. And of course, be on the lookout for Friday's installment of the Prayerful Posse. We'll talk about the Pope's big meeting with the College of Cardinals at the top of the year and what that could mean to the traditional Latin Mass. Join me. You can't miss this episode. Father Gerald Murray, Robert Royal. Go to Arroyo Grande Show wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get to some celebrating. With so many tragedies in Australia at Brown University, the murder of the Reiners in L.A., and the persecution of the faithful in Africa, it's hard to see light this time of year. But it has not failed us, and the light of the world is coming once again. To help usher in the celebration of the birth of Christ, it's important, I think, to remember this is truly the most wonderful time of the year, because of the promise it holds. This legendary singer joined us in studio a few years back. Here's Andy Williams singing The Most Wonderful Time of the Year.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, with the kids jingle-belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all. With those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the happiest season of all. There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoe, hearts will be glowing when lovers are near. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of glories of Christmases long ago. Oh, oh, it's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoe. Hearts will be glowing when lovers are near. It's the most wonderful time. Yes, the most wonderful time. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Can you fulfill a huge Christmas wish of mine?
Now, what would that be?
Could we sing I Wish You a Merry Christmas?
You want to sing I Wish You a Merry Christmas?
You and me,
all
together.
Right. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Harmony with the great man himself. Thank you.
Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad.
I saw him in concert so many times. He was dramatic, compelling, and connected to song material like few singers. To me, he was the greatest interpreter of the American songbook ever. This was part of a Christmas special produced by Family Theater in the 1980s, recorded after a performance in Las Vegas. Here's the voice, Frank Sinatra, singing The First Noel.
The first Noel, the angels did say, was to certain poor shepherds in fields as they lay, in fields where they lay keeping their sheep on a cold winter's night. Born is the king.
My next guest has one of the most iconic voices in the recording industry that you can't go through a Christmas season without hearing at least half a dozen times, maybe two dozen times. His first Christmas album is still among the top 10 Christmas records of all time, and he's recorded another five. He's been recording for more than 60 years and creating hits for generations. Here is Johnny Mathis singing a bit of Winter Wonderland and some of our interview.
Over the ground lies a mantle of white, a heaven of diamonds shine down through the night. Two hearts are thrilling in spite of the chilling weather. Love knows no season, love knows no clime. Romance can blossom any old time. Here in the open, we're walking and hoping together, 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 together. Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening, a beautiful sight. We're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird, here to stay is a new bird. He's singing a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland. In the meadow we can build a snowman and pretend that he's a circus clown. We'll have lots of fun with Mr. Snowman until the other kiddies knock him down. When it snows, ain't it thrilling? Though your nose gets chilling, frolic and play the Eskimo way, walking in a winter wonderland, walking in a winter wonderland, winter wonder, winter wonderland, winter, winter wonder, wonderland.
Let's talk for a moment about Christmas and your favorite Christmas song. Do you have one? Or have you become so accustomed to singing those Christmas songs that you just go, you know, like Santa Claus, I'm going to put the costume on, I'm going to go out, I'm going to do this, and then I can't wait for January to come. Is there a little bit of that?
Christmas songs are like candy. You eat it and then it goes away and... sort of glad it did. Until next year. Don't worry, I'll be back next year.
Right.
Yeah. It's that way. Because a lot of them are, and I say this in a nice way, trivial kind
yes.
of
That's right.
singing. Not really singing, just kind of singing.
They're sing-along yes. songs rather than
right.
a song you sing.
Right. And for years and years, Christmas music was kind of that way. Mm. But I mind some old Bing Crosby songs that he sang at Christmas time. It's the most wonderful time of the year. A wonderful song written by the director of The Tonight Show, I think.
Mm.
But the Christmas songs have gotten much better.
What is your Christmas wish for everyone watching this Christmas, this New Year's?
I'm sending you a little Christmas wrapped up with love. A little peace, a little light to remind you of how I'm waiting for you, praying for you. I forgot the words.
You got the best part in,
did I?
Okay. I love that.
Christmas is so special to me because of the music, of course, but mm-hmm. because I'm able to share it a little bit more.
Well, I'm thankful for your spirit and how you imbue the holidays and this music. As you said, these songs can be pretty trivial, but in the hands of the right people, they're filled with life and love and joy, and
Thank you
do that. Now, can I have a Christmas request? Just a little tiny request.
Yes.
Can I sing with Johnny Mathis for a minute?
Yes.
What shall we sing? Just hear those sleigh
bells ringling, ting, ting, tingling too. Come along, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Outside the snow is falling and friends are calling, yoo-hoo!
Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you and you and you.
Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, let's go, let's look at the show. We're riding in a wonderland of snow.
Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up, it's grand, just holding your hand.
We're gliding along with the song of a wintry fairyland. Our cheeks, that's the hardest part of that song to sing.
Rosy and comfy, cozy. Well, Merry Christmas, Johnny Mathis.
Thank you.
What a joy. Thank you. You know, I often repeat to audiences that line from Deck the Halls, and it's really the entire reason I decided to record my Christmas Merry and Bright album. It goes, follow me in merry measure while I tell of Yuletide treasure. These Christmas carols, these hymns, even some of the contemporary songs of Christmas are really treasures, and I wanted to unpack them. So I did a great deal of research into the backstories of these songs. And I'm so pleased that the album landed on Billboard's holiday and jazz charts and that Christmas Merry and Bright is now part of so many families' Advent and Christmas celebrations. Before we return to some of our classic performers, here's a behind-the-scenes glimpse of the making of Christmas Merry and Bright.
One, two, three.
I've always loved Christmas music. It's my favorite music ever, and full confession, I listen to Christmas music year-round.
Hark, the herald angels sing, glory to the new.
Here's what I love most about Christmas music. It's eternal. It touches the past, the present, and the future. Your great-grandparents were singing many of these songs. We're singing these songs today. And our children's children will be singing them tomorrow.
Joy to the world, the Savior reigns. Let men their songs employ.
My audience mostly knows me from television or my books. What they probably don't know is in my early life, I was trained as an actor, I did a lot of musicals, and I sang. And then for many years I didn't. So when I was approached to do this project, and I kind of backed off for a minute. I was a little hesitant. So I went through each of these tunes, and I basically did a deep dive into each of them. Where did they come from? What do they mean? And I have to tell you, I was stunned by some of what I discovered. I thought, okay, let's go on this adventure.
Noel, 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 born is the King of Israel.
I loved it. It was like getting in touch with a part of myself that I guess I had left behind or thought I'd left behind. It's never too late. To me, Christmas is a classic sound. So when we were thinking, how should we approach this album? I knew I wanted a big band feel and sound. Kevin Koska was our arranger on this project, and Kevin, if you don't know his name, you certainly know his work. Kevin Koska arranged and orchestrated The Greatest Showman, The Dark Knight, The Live Jungle Book, but his background and his love is jazz. We brought these songs to him, and in record time, he turned out some incredible, sizzling hot at times, and very tender, beautiful arrangements.
Christmas time is here, families drawing near.
In the heart of the French Quarter, there's a wonderful little theater in New Orleans, Le Petit Theater. Sound-wise, it was perfect, and it fit all of us.
Go tell it on the mountain.
This band, these are like the super players of New Orleans. Many of these guys have been playing together for 30, 40 years. They know each other so well and gelled so quickly. I've really never seen anything like it.
Most of the cats in the band have a lot of history of working together over the past decades. So when this collection of musicians come together, it's instantaneous connection, and the music just flows because we not only know each other musically, but we know each other personally.
We made a decision early on, as much as we could, that we would record live with the band in the room. Now, that is often not the case today. Usually, they lay down the tracks with the band, and the singer is in an isolation booth weeks later recording to tracks. I didn't want to do that. That feeling that you get, there is a rich crackle in the room. You can hear it on those recordings.
Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun.
That style of music has a certain energy to it. It's very soulful, swinging. There are great big bands all around the world, but big bands in New Orleans have a different thing.
Jingle, 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 jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is.
We need to capture the energy and the spirit and the goosebumps that the listener gets while listening to this type of music. Raymond has been fun. He knows exactly what he wants. He has very high standards for himself, which is really all we can ask for.
He wants to get it right. You know, all of us want to get it right, and he's right in there with it, which is killing. It's really good.
His musical instincts are phenomenal. He's just a character. He's fun. You know, he makes it fun for everybody.
You know, when he walked in the room, he has this bigger-than-life charisma that just kind of takes over the room.
He's a great singer. Really, really nice guy. He's just, is he a comedian? Because, I mean, he cracks me up.
Oh, he's here. Jose, you made it. How you doing?
Good.
When I knew I was doing a Christmas album, Marian Bright, one of the first people who popped into mind was Jose Feliciano.
Feliz Navidad.
Oye, Feliz Navidad. Oye,
Feliz Navidad.
Jose is an international voice of Christmas, and his Feliz Navidad is one of the most downloaded songs of the season. People love it. Not only did he agree to come and be a guest on the album, Jose agreed to do a new arrangement.
I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Jose did an incredible flamenco solo that I just loved. To sit across in a recording studio from a legend like Jose Feliciano for me was just, what an honor. I think people will love it. I dare you not to sing along. I love the togetherness of Christmas, the warmth of Christmas, the memories of Christmas. And I wanted to capture all of that in this album.
We had a way of making Christmas morning as merry as can be.
I can only describe this project as an explosion of joy. We wanted to remind people of the merry and the bright.
La, 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 la.
It's my little contribution to the music and wonder of Christmas.
La, la, la,
if you need a few stocking stuffers this season, get your copy of Christmas Merry and Bright, the album. It's at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple Music, Spotify, and of course, the EWTN catalog or wherever you get your music. And hey, the spider who saved Christmas and the wise men who found Christmas both make wonderful gifts. And you know what I love about these? They're great read-alongs for the family at this time of year, and of course, a gift you can give to young people. Speaking of gifts, knowing and hearing the great Keely Smith perform was such a gift in my life. Having her on the show was an added bonus. I just loved Keely. She and her husband, Louis Prima, lit up Vegas in the 1950s.
She would go on to conquer the charts with that old black magic and I Wish You Love. Sadly, we lost the great Keely Smith on December 16th. She was 89. She had a career that spanned more than 70 years. Like Johnny Mathis, Keely was a natural, authentic singer who, as she told me years ago, considered her voice a gift.
I want to talk about that voice of yours. Here are some reviews. New York Times from this year. Miss Smith's warm, molasses-textured voice is remarkably intact. Here's the Los Angeles Times. Her voice has lost none of its honeyed warmth and creamy luster. Here's one more. Her timeless tone intact, Smith has still can still caress a ballad and wail on a beat with a control eclipsing her younger peers. What is the secret to this voice?
Well,
without, you've got to work at it.
No, I don't. I truly don't. I've never had a lesson. If I'm going to go to work, I rehearse about 2 weeks ahead of time. If I'm going to record, I rehearse about a month ahead, learning the songs. But I've never abused it either. I've never smoked. I drank very little in my life. I've never been into drugs of any kind. And other than eating a lot of pasta, I eat very healthy, you know.
Well, maybe that's what keeps that voice intact.
I don't know.
Voices like this don't come out of 74-year-old bodies. I've got to tell you
that. They do if God's leading them. And I don't mean to sound overly religious. You know, I just feel that he's with me all the time. Okay. But I truly believe it is a God-given thing because I didn't have to work at it. I've been very blessed with it. And like I said, I don't abuse it.
Now, this act was something. I mean, the two of you. You had the sort of deadpan.
But not in those days. In those days, I was just a band singer. In the days of the big band, that I would sit in the chair.
Right.
And then I'd get up and I'd do my song or I'd do a duet with him or whatever, and I'd still go back and sit in the chair.
Right.
Then after the big band died down and there was no more work for the big band, he and I went out, just the two of us, in a duo. Mm. And naturally, I became more important to him as it went along because he only had me. There was nobody else for him to work
off. But this chemistry was unbelievable because it was, he would jump around and just be madcap, out of control, maniacal at times. And you just stood there, placid as could be, at times bored.
I was. I really was. You know, it's funny because if you look back at some of the old tapes, especially the Ed Sullivan things,
right, I used to
laugh a lot. Nobody ever saw me laugh. And when we went to the Sahara is really when the deadpan thing happened. Mm. And it was an accident. It wasn't something that was planned. It wasn't something that I think I could have done if I tried to do it intentionally. Mm-hmm. And it was, we worked from midnight till 6 in the morning. We did 5 shows a night.
Wow.
And the first half hour of each show, I had nothing to do but to stand there. And I wasn't a hand clapper. I wasn't a finger snapper. Mm-hmm. And we had a very small stage. And I stood in front of the upright piano, and I would cross my arms in front of my chest like this. I'd lean up against the piano, and I'd stand there for a half hour. But in the Sahara Lounge, I could see people coming in the main front door. I could see them coming in and out of the main showroom. I could see them coming in and out of the side door. And I was so busy doing what I call being nosy, watching everything and everybody, that when Louis would come over and pull on my skirt, he really was interrupting my chain of my thought, you know. And I would look at him like, leave me alone. You know, what are you doing here? And it turned into something wonderful.
Wow. What does Christmas mean to you personally this time of year?
Family. Definitely family. As a matter of fact, I never work in November and December. This year, I found myself working in both months, which is very unusual for me. And mainly because I love Christmas. Mm. People are nicer. I mean, the decorations all over the city and in the stores, they're just beautiful.
Yeah.
But for some reason, people are nicer to you on the street. They're nicer to you when they're driving their cars. They're more courteous. And it's just a wonderful, warm time of the year, and I like it.
How I will miss Keely Smith. She was down to earth, warm, and what a singer.
Here singing White Christmas is the remarkable Keely Smith.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, chord awry. May your days be merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be wise.
Before we close out the show and give you our final song, I need to thank you for joining us throughout the year. And as we enter our 30th year, due to you, God's providence, and of course, Reverend Mother, I want you to know we've never lost sight of Mother Angelica's first charge to me when we founded EWTN News. Follow the truth wherever it leads and report it. And we've tried to be true to that. I want to thank my senior producer, my executive producer, Christopher Edwards, associate producer, Rita Sporlitter, and everyone at the DC production crew for getting the show on the air. You know who you are. Producing a show with literally two people is unheard of in television, here or anywhere else. I want to thank them both and thank you for allowing us to come into your home each week and for making us the longest running primetime show with the same host in EWTN's history. I am so grateful for that. From our family to yours, I hope this Christmas season is filled with countless blessings, peace, lots of love. Now to close out our annual Christmas party, as she does every year, Keely Smith singing a song that I think touches all of us wherever we are. On behalf of the staff and crew of EWTN News, I'm Raymond Arroyo. Have a blessed Christmas season, and here's to a new year filled with surprises.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can count on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents under the tree. Christmas Eve.